Welcome to the Know Your Finance with Priyavas podcast. Welcome to episode 1 of Know Your Finance with Priyavas. Next, we'll talk to Paul Fisser about what happened in the finance world this month.
Hi, Devi. Welcome, listeners, to our first podcast. It's been actually quite an eventful month this past couple of weeks. We've seen things happening on local front here in South Africa, as well as internationally with Bitcoin and several other things. Just touching on the Bitcoin, we've seen it rising up to meteorical rise up to $20,000, which a lot of people were quite excited about. And in the past couple of weeks, we've seen it drop down to $8,500 again. I think a lot of people are a bit stressed about this. A lot of people have put a lot of money into this. And I think it's exciting times. Stressful, but exciting.
Yes, I agree. I'm just a bit confused. So I luckily got out of it, but I think I only inserted, I think $2,000 or whatever, and then got out as soon as I split even because I got scared. But I know a few people who lost close to $25,000 on a, literally as they saw the decline was happening, they pressed sell. And it takes, let's say it takes 30 minutes for the transaction to go through, whatever. And then in that 30 minutes, they literally lost $25,000. Which is quite crazy. But then we also have this other hand of people who are saying, no, it's perfect. We are buying now like crazy. What's your opinion on that, Paul?
Well, I think looking at the cryptocurrencies, you need to see that cryptocurrencies shouldn't really be used as a get-rich-quick scheme. You just look at your investment portfolio and just see it as another method of diversifying your portfolio. So if cryptocurrencies happens to fit into your portfolio, put some money in there. Just don't put all your eggs in one basket. And I think try and understand the technology behind each cryptocurrency. With Bitcoin, we've seen that it is an older cryptocurrency. It was developed in 2007. And with it being an older cryptocurrency, there are quite a lot of limitations to it. With the newer cryptocurrencies like Ethereum, etc., coming out, we've seen faster transaction speeds, lower fees, and really, I think that's where some people are losing out, is due to the slower transaction times associated with Bitcoin and the volatility associated to cryptocurrencies in general. I think once the market has settled, you can go back to Bitcoin, but currently, just looking at the newer cryptocurrencies and the speed of transactions, they're showing a lot more promise.
Okay, and for those of us who, let's say, we don't want to invest in Bitcoin, what are the top, let's say, top three investments that are, you don't have to have a lot of money. Let's say you want to invest $10,000 or $5,000. What would be a good move?
I think staying with the stock exchange, you can look at your indices. If you want to invest in the JSE Top 40, you'll see that you can just buy a unit in one of those indices, and you'll get quite a diversified portfolio. Just some of the sectors that you would want to stay away from this year is, I think, the construction sector might not be the best sector to invest in currently. And then just looking at your more traditional ways of investing is perhaps putting some money in a unit trust or actually just getting a retirement annuity, I think will be one of your safer bets.
That sounds like great advice, Paul. Thank you so much. Has there happened anything in the global market? Let's move away from Bitcoin. Has there happened anything in the global market that will influence the South African market this month?
Well, I think if we look at the Asian and the European stock markets, they've actually slumped quite a bit. And that is because of increasing worries that the United States might have an interest rate hike. You could definitely see that change in the various different foreign currencies.
So would that affect our interest rates or our lending or our foreign spending or, let's say, the price of oil? What would be affected?
I think when we look at the US dollar and the strengthening of the other foreign currencies, that'll definitely have an impact on the South African economy. Due to the fact that the US dollar, obviously a lot of the oil prices and the gold prices and everything is measured in US dollar, you could perhaps see a drop in the petrol price in South Africa, which could also lead to an increase in consumer spending, a possible interest rate cut in South Africa, and eventually lead to a decrease in the unemployment rate.
That's great. That sounds like actually it could be a good step for us. I'm just hoping this keeps on. What would be the biggest factor for all these advantages coming to SA?
Well, I think due to the decisions made by the US president, people are a bit worried about the possible interest rate hike, as I said. But also with Cyril Ramaphosa stepping into as the leader of the ANC and having a lot more larger say in the South African economy and making a lot more of the economic decisions, we've really seen investor confidence rise a bit in South Africa. And that's really strengthened our rand-dollar exchange rate. We've seen a lot of positives happening in the South African economy since Cyril Ramaphosa has stepped up.
That's great. I'm really excited about our country, and I'm sure the listeners are as well, because it's always good to feel safe and secure, especially in something as volatile as investing. Now, moving on, what is the best strategy to save money, Paul?
Well, I think, as we said, keep your eyes open and look for the various investment opportunities that you have. Obviously, the stock exchange is a good way to invest your money, get some money in the stocks, and possibly into property. Obviously, we know that property is a difficult investment vehicle, and you do need a large capital to get into that market. But there are also a lot of different property companies on the JSE. So you can possibly just buy a couple of shares in a property company, and that'll give you the necessary exposure to the property market.
That's brilliant, Paul. I've actually never thought about it that way, because normally for us youngsters, we think, let's say a house is 2 million bucks. It'd be smart to go to the bank and say, I want a 2 million rand loan, and I want to buy this house, and then pay, let's say I'm paying 15K a month to the bank, and I charge 15K for the people who live in the house. Would that be smart? Is that a bit of a risky step? Or how what is the smartest way to do it, though?
Well, I always advocate not to enter into too much debt. Try and get as large a deposit as possible to put that down and to lower the monthly repayments. If that is the way, I also always try and advocate that instead of buying a house for you to live in and use as your primary residence, try and increase your income-generating assets. And buy possibly a smaller townhouse, something at a lower cost, and get your tenants in. That way, as you know, your repayment rate will normally stay the same if the interest rate doesn't change. And every year you can get an increase on your monthly rent that you are getting from your tenant. So I normally try and purchase a house to say within the first 3 years you want to try and break even, and after that you start seeing a profit.
It's even smart to just, let's say, instead of just paying rent yourself, buy a house on loan and then pay rent to the bank technically, but then you are renting to buy, which is a much better move.
Yes, that is also great. Unfortunately, you will have a bit of your capital sitting in one asset, and you normally pay off your house in about 20 years. And now this is an asset where your money is stuck and you won't have any excess money to try and put into other savings and into other investments.
I completely agree. It is risky. It's risky both ways. I think your thought about putting a big deposit is the best step. Moving on, tell us about an exciting client story or an experience that occurred this month. Well, I'm always so interested to hear.
Well, a little while back when we had the end of the 2017 tax season for individuals, a lady came up to me and she asked would I be able to help her with the tax. Obviously, I said yes. And it proved to be quite an interesting tax return that we had to file. This is a lady that's been working for commission. And what a lot of people don't know is that with commission earners, you're actually able to deduct a lot of expenses. You're able to deduct your home office expenses, your possible entertainment expenses, travel costs, and also depreciation on your assets. Obviously, you need to put away your receipts and keep the necessary documentation aside. But it's always good to know what you're able to deduct from tax and what the necessary requirements are.
But that sounds a little bit too easy. So for instance, if let's say you're working on a commission or you work from home, can you then deduct your full living, let's say rent cost of your apartment, or only half? And let's say entertainment, you're taking out clients, is it, so you just save the slip and then that can be deducted from your should have been paid tax? Is that how it works?
Well, I think let's touch on the entertainment one first. As a commission earner, obviously any expenses that you incur to try and generate a commission for yourself, that'll be tax deductible. So for instance, if you do take a client out with the purpose of trying to sign some business from that client, then yes, those costs will be tax deductible. And then looking at your home office expenses, I think the largest requirement is that you need to have an area set aside as a home office. You can't sit with your laptop on your lap and say, you know what, half of my living room is now my office. You need to have an area set aside with allocated where you can say put your working area, put your laptop, perhaps do your filing, and then apportion the floor area of your home office into your larger home space. And then you can deduct a portion of your rental, deduct a portion of your electricity, etc., etc.
Okay, now that's perfect. That sounds amazing. And this, you measure this yourself, or do you get a consultant to come and check that for you?
Well, you can measure it yourself. I'd always say just make the best estimate that you can based on facts. Because obviously once SARS decides to audit you, you should be able to actually corroborate how you came to this and to be able to support your estimates and judgments.
Okay, now that's perfect. You shouldn't mess with SARS.
Yeah, no, it's better to have your documentation in order. And remember, you need to save all your documentation for a minimum of 5 years.
Yes, no. I know that fact. And my own financial advisor has told me not to throw away any books. So that is good. Moving on, let's look at an in-depth look at one of your services that Pre-Harvest Business Solutions has to offer.
Well, I think there is actually an interesting service that we do give. Is to help people with company registrations. And starting off in this new year, I think a lot of people have New Year's resolutions of trying to earn an extra salary, perhaps start a side hustle. And that's where we can come in. We can help people to get past their normal statutory compliance and help them to comply with all the necessary legislation to get their companies off the ground.
That's perfect. And as I... correct me if I'm wrong, but you guys offer the full load of services, everything from designing to developing to whatever the client needs.
Definitely. We help with everything from the company registration to the necessary SARS and CIPC registrations and submissions. We can assist with all the accounting needs. And then also we are in partnership with another company who helps us to really market and promote the business. So everything really from starting your business to growing your business, you'll be able to assist with.
Now that's perfect, Paul. And let's say the listeners want to contact you about a quick small tidbit of information. And let's say they don't want to be charged for it, because you know everybody wants something for free. At what email address should they email you for just a quick tidbit of information if they wanted to? Just ask a quick question and then possibly a month later maybe become one of your clients. But let's say they just wanted to contact you just with a small sentence, where should they contact you?
Well, I think the easiest way would be to go onto our website. We do have a contact us page there, but they can also use our general inquiry email address, which is contact@priavis, that's priavis.co.za. And if they really want to talk to someone in person, our business telephone number is 011-568-2582, and we can help them from there. I mean, there's any small query that they have, we'll be able to assist them with.
No, that's perfect, Paul. I love it. I think you guys are really doing good, and I really appreciate talking to you on this podcast, and I think the listeners would enjoy it.
Yeah, I think so, Davi. And just to also encourage the listeners, if there's anything that they've been wondering about or that they might want to answer for, they can also drop us an email on the same address, and we will be more than willing to actually answer that question in our next podcast.
Yeah, that would be perfect. I think if more than two people email, or if a question is really makes a substantial effort or influence, I think it would be smart to put that in let's say a Q&A section for the next podcast.
Definitely. And I think any interaction from the listeners would be great.
Yeah, no, that would be perfect. Well, thank you guys so much for listening to the Know Your Finance with Priyavas podcast. Have a great day. Goodbye. Thank you so much for listening. See you next time.